Michael J. for Hope for the Warriors. Started back in 06 at Camp Lejeune. Military families witnessing the effects of war on their loved ones. Now, almost 20 years later, they've aided over 53,000 service members, veterans, and families with confidential, high-quality behavioral health care services at little or no cost to post 9/11 vets and their families. Over 91% of every dollar donated goes directly to the programs. If you're as concerned about our heroes as I am, go to hopeforthewarriors.org.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. It's Dr. Madeira back here on the Dr. Madeira Show, and we have Dr. Paul Anderson back today to talk about a case study that he did with myself in his clinic in North Seattle. And how's it going today, Dr. A?
It is going great. I'm glad to be able to talk to you. We've got a nice wet one here in Seattle going on.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a great moldy climate we're in, and
yes.
No sunshine.
Yeah, it's one of those days.
Yep. So, well, hopefully everybody listening knows Dr. Anderson already, but for those who are the uninitiated, his background is in naturopathic medicine and integrative medicine. Dr. Anderson is medical director of Advanced Medical Therapies in Seattle, Washington, a clinic focusing on the care of patients with cancer and chronic diseases. Former positions include professor of pharmacology in clinical medicine at Bastyr University and chief of IV services at Bastyr Oncology Research Center. He is a graduate of NUNM in Portland, Oregon, and began instructing classes at the naturopathic medical schools in the early 1990s. He is co-author of the Hay House book, Outside the Box Cancer Therapies, with Dr. Mark Stengler, as well as co-author with Jack Canfield in the anthology Success Breakthroughs book. He is a frequent CME speaker and writer and has extended his educational outreach through his CE website, consultdranderson.com, and has his own seminars through the AAMP, which the next one is coming up here pretty soon, right?
Last 3 days of May, yeah. 29, 30, 31 in Scottsdale. It's all about treatment for advanced GI conditions. So it should be actually pretty exciting. You got a lot of stuff on dysbiotic problems like SIBO and SIFO and GI cancers and all the other good stuff. Yep.
Excellent. I hope to be there. And I've gone to one in the past on infectious diseases. So I hope to see some doctors there and practitioners there. And today, as mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we're going to really get into a case study where I was the patient. And basically, I'll kind of give everybody the background. It has to do with a concussion. So today's topic is traumatic brain injuries, concussions, and how to recover. Because frankly, allopathic neurology, while really helpful in some situations, has not evolved to a place where they can really help concussions, quote-unquote minor traumatic brain injuries. And one of my MD neurologists at a hospital in Seattle, I won't say which one, said to me, you actually would recover faster if your skull had fractured, because the pressure in your skull then would have been relieved, and then you would have had a surgical intervention. And, you know, I mean, frankly, if you go to the hospital, they have medications and surgery, and that's what they're trained to do. And as a past emergency medical technician, I'm all about using hospitals for emergency care and surgeries and following the therapeutic order. However, for today's topic, I really think people are better off getting a different standard of care. I'll go into detail about my experience more as we talk today, but the background was, is I was driving to my clinic in Seattle, and it was the end of May 2018, and a gentleman was driving behind me and reading the news on his cell phone, and he rear-ended me. He basically used my car to stop. Thank you. So don't read the news on your cell phone. Matter of fact, just put your cell phone away. It is illegal in Washington State to drive with the cell phone in your hand for a reason. And I believe some statistics say it's worse than drunk driving. So
I think so. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, it's quite bad. I think a lot of accidents today are because people are on their phones. So I was not at fault. I was immediately dazed and really had a hard time, you know, putting thoughts together. I had my bell rung pretty good. I don't know how fast he was going, but could have been going anywhere from 40 to 50 miles per hour. And he had a 1970 Chevy El Camino, which was like a, I think it's like a classic car now because we're in 2020. So
yeah.
Yeah. So I had a lot of pain, a lot of headaches. I couldn't read well on a laptop computer screen days afterwards, and amnesia. So that's with the memory stuff. I basically had temporal headaches for about 4 months. So my summer was screwed. I couldn't go to concerts. I couldn't go to loud restaurants or places I would meet friends typically in Seattle for the summer. I had a lot of pain and a lot of problems with sleep. And I almost had to shut down my clinic. I worked part-time. And my cognitive therapist, who I recommend you get a cognitive therapist if you have a head injury, even if it's not a car accident, and you've got a team of practitioners to work with. So maybe we can talk about that too. But basically, it sucked. I mean, it sucked really bad. And I played contact sports growing up. I played soccer. I grew up with two brothers. I've had my head hit. I've been, you know, in fights when I was in first grade and karate and stuff. But this was like the worst head injury that I ever remember. So there is something in medicine we call a cumulative effect. So even if you're like, I never had a head injury, it could just be the straw that breaks the camel's back, as we say. So then Dr. A, I saw you got your new hard shell HBOT. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we see things on Facebook, and it was blurry because my vision was blurry after a head injury, but I could see enough that I could say, hey, that looks like a hyperbaric chamber. And I messaged you and I said, hey, any chance that this could help me recover? I'm having a hard time recovering from a car accident. So I can't really work. And you said, absolutely. So maybe you want to put your side of the story in now of like what the prescription plan was and why, and we can get into the subjective stuff after that.
Sure. So, yeah, you contacted me, and I can't remember whether I knew you'd had the accident or not for other reasons, but I think you contacted me not too long after. And so one of the things that we had been working with, so you mentioned the new chamber. So we have two different kind of chambers. One does a little shallower dive. It's really good for a whole spectrum of things at its pressure, but a hard side chamber are normally larger and go to much deeper depth. So these would be more like the chambers that you would see, you know, that the Navy divers use to decompress or commercial divers do, that sort of thing. So we had both available. With acute head injuries, that's the one time where it might be a couple others, but in this setting, that's the one time when it's acute where higher pressure is actually probably better. Normally with chronic stuff, it almost doesn't matter between higher and lower pressure. But with yours being pretty fresh, and with once I heard that you were you know, not able to work very much and all the other symptoms we get into, I figured, well, we should just go for the gold here. So my thought was once you asked was, what we've developed at our clinic is to try and do as much synergy as possible around the hyperbaric experience. So a hyperbaric takes and it puts you into a pressurized chamber, and then you have oxygen that's run in. So you're breathing extra oxygen under pressure. What that does is it supersaturates the plasma, the kind of the yellowish colored part of your blood that doesn't have cells in it, with more oxygen. So it forces oxygen into the cells because the gradient's higher. And what that actually does on the tail end is it forces toxic things and carbon dioxide and acids out of the cells. So it actually speeds the turnover through your cells of nutrients and all whatever good stuff you're putting in. And it speeds the removal of metabolic waste. One of the problems in neurological, like a head injury, for example, or any actual physical injury, is the injured part will start to build up a slowdown in this transfer of the good stuff in and the bad stuff out. And so what happens then is the pH shifts just a little bit, not so much that you die or anything, but it shifts just enough so that the cells kind of, it's almost like they down-regulate, like they go into low gear so that they're protected. The problem is your brain cells, they're not working as well as they ought to. So those symptoms that you were having, between pain and memory problems and just sensory overload, all that, those are kind of very classic signs. So the hyperbaric does it with oxygen and pressure. And then because of what we do at our clinic using other things like IV therapy, and like you, we use supplements, and we do neurofeedback, all kinds of things. what we had found with our brain injury folks was if we would give them an IV with some nutrients that would be pro-healing, and then, of course, they're taking stuff for pro-healing in between orally, the hyperbaric oxygen synergizes that as well. So it's the good part of the O2 going in and the CO2 going out and removing the trash, but it's also let's move some goodies in there that would help the cell feel healthier. So that's what we basically set up with you. And I don't know if you remember, because you really weren't in great shape memory-wise when this thing happened, but I think I told you up front, I said, well, I'd like to present you as a case because in August, so this was, I forget when we start, June maybe or something.
Yeah, June 2018.
Okay, yeah. Yep. And I think August 2018, I was doing an actual talk at the annual Hyperbaric Medicine Conference about synergy. And so it was like, can you mix IVs and HBOT and all that stuff? And in the hyperbaric community, this is getting to be it's a new idea to them because they're all about hyperbaric and they're not sure about these other things. So I thought you'd be a great case. Upside was it all worked out. We did tracking with you, had you fill out those symptom survey forms and stuff. We used a traumatic brain injury form that was validated from some university somewhere. and mostly I did that so that I could graph if you had, you know, did you get worse? Did you get better? What got better faster, et cetera? We'll talk about that later. But so it was really nice to have that. And I think that mostly what you were doing was three big things: the oral supplementation, et cetera, IV and hyperbaric combo. And then, of course, you're doing other things such as physical medicine and cognitive therapy, all of that too. So you were really doing a little of everything, which I thought was great because you were in bad shape. You know, you're kind of the poster child for acute brain trauma. The trip through the first part of your therapy, which was up to the time that I had to put the stuff together to go to this conference, was about, it was 16 or 17 hyperbaric dives. And so we can talk later about like how many are good and all that stuff. But that's kind of the big picture of what I was thinking. And you never know how something's going to happen. But one nice thing is the fresher, so to speak, an injury is, the faster you can usually get the healing processes turned around. Because it's sort of like if you're in shock from something else, you know, you walk into a door that opens into you or something like that, it stuns your body. When you get a TBI, your nervous system is stunned, and if you can push it towards healing, it's open to that. If it's 5 years later, you can still help it, but now all it knows is sort of dysfunction, and it takes longer to kind of get into that healing part.
Yeah, I think that's a good differentiation for the audience, because I've had other practitioners or friends of patients contact me and or asking questions at events I've done in Montana or in Seattle and say, hey, you know, I know this person, they had this accident and they have a head injury, maybe not a car accident, it could be motorcycle accident, or there's all kinds of ways to get head injuries. You can just slip and fall on your steps in your house. Yep. So, you know, it doesn't have to be football or a car accident. But basically, I think it's good for people to understand that this was acute, and maybe you can explain, as we discuss, like, what would it look like if somebody had a really bad head injury and surgery, and then things are healed up, or they mm-hmm. had a really bad fall and, you know, their head was cracked open and now it's healed up, and what would be the different treatment plan potentially for them? Obviously, it's going to be individualized for everybody, but so we're not giving people different message. If you're listening, you've had several head injuries and that was 20 years ago, your treatment plan would be longer, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, to keep it as simple as possible, the further away from the injury you are, the more treatment it takes to get the ship turned around. In your case, where we were doing, you know, a bunch of things together, and it was really pretty close to when you had your car accident, the hope was is that we would start to see things turning maybe in like a third to a quarter the amount of time. You know, not that you're all better then, but we'd start to see kind of the ship turn then. Because let's go to the whole other end of the spectrum. You take, there's a really good study done with NFL players where it's a chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So it's multiple things over time. And most of these that were in the study were retired. So it's a long time of head injuries. And the difference, just to say it out loud, is they weren't doing other therapies. They were just doing hyperbaric, which is super, super important because it actually helped the majority of them. But the first checkpoint to get to some improvement was 40 dives, okay, which is it's a lot longer than you did to get to some improvement. And in some of them, especially the older ones that had real bad things going on, it was 80 dives. And I saw that presented at a hyperbaric conference in 2011 or 12. And I thought, well, what if, and I didn't have a chamber at the time or anything, but I thought, well, what if we did some of this other stuff that we do to try and help promote healing? Would it work faster? And anecdotally, we saw that over time, you know, that yes, we could really get there. But even with our integrated therapies, someone like you who in the first, you know, say 10 dives was seeing some good trajectory, somebody who's 5 years out or 10 years out, or a former, you know, hockey player, pro football player, something like that, where they've been banging their head, even with all the synergy, instead of, like, let's say between 5 and 10 treatments starting to see some movement, it's usually like somewhere around 20. So it's still about half, when you start seeing changes. But the general rule is the longer it's been since the injury, the slower it is for your body to recognize how to heal that. And you said something in the intro that's super important as well. Most people don't remember how many head injuries they've had. And starting from childhood, when you maybe wouldn't remember it, you know, you might have to ask parents or something. But it's amazing the number of people when you ask them and they'll say, no, I've never, you know, and then they remember oh yeah, I was in a car accident where I lost consciousness, or or I played, you know, lacrosse and I got knocked out three times when I was playing or whatever. So it's just really like, the more head injuries you have, the worse your memory is. And I'm one of those people. Like, I've had everything from my skull being crushed in a car accident in like 1970, all across the spectrum. Thankfully, like the last concussion I had was about 4 years ago. Now I slipped on ice in a big way and landed on my head. Like, nothing broke my fall except my head. And I had, it was classic stuff. And I did this stuff right away and it really, really helped. But the cumulative effect, if that was my first concussion, it would have been bad anyway. But like, it lights back up all the problems that you've had in the past. So the pain and the hypersensitivity to sound and all that stuff, that's normal. Another thing I just want to ask, because I think this throws people off, and it's not because the specialist is giving you bad information. It's just they're only giving the information they have. But what's your recollection of your neurologist's interaction with you? Did you bring up that you might do hyperbaric or anything? What was their advice? How'd that go?
I think by the time I had seen an MD neurologist, it was July.
Yeah, probably.
So it had been some time and we were already doing hyperbaric chamber stuff, and I didn't bring it up. I didn't even say I was a naturopathic doctor, because I just wanted them to think, hey, it's just some guy off the street, got in a car accident. I didn't want to like put any preconceived notions of who I was or wasn't in their mind from past experiences I've had where, you know, I wasn't treated fairly as when I said I was a naturopathic doctor.
Yeah,
so, exactly. Yeah. It's great being discriminated. Basically, I think what I remember was, as I said, hey, you know, I had this head injury, you know, what is the research say? What medications can help? You know, what do you have? I was going for the evidence hard. And they had really nothing. I went back for a follow-up and I had a different doctor. I was there also to get on my records that I couldn't work from a neurologist, and that the max I could work was, I think it was 12 hours a week at that point, 3 half days a week. Mm. So 4 hours, before my brain would tank. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the, metrics that we actually followed with you, was your ability to work and actually be mm-hmm. around noise and stuff. So I think that is important, because a lot of people, and of course this was a long, long time ago, but I remember when my skull was crushed and it was a horrific high speed car accident. So it's probably good I'm here, but like, once in the ER, you know, once they realized I wasn't dead, and they stabilized me, you know, that sort of stuff. And then they put me in the hospital just to watch, make sure my brain didn't swell too much. It swelled plenty. My head, the front of my head, I looked, I don't know what I look like. It stuck out like 3 inches from the front, 'cause the bones just like boom. But basically there was no treatment. I mean, it was like, he'll live or he won't. Those were my two options. And he's going to have a lot of headaches and all that stuff. And then I was like in this, you know, just funk for like a month afterwards, where I would go in and out of memory and consciousness and stuff. and so it was sort of like, even at that level where you're that hurt, there wasn't a whole lot. And I've talked to people since then, and it's like, there's not much new. You get symptomatic medication, certainly, which is good. You know, if you need something, or if you need your brain to stop swelling or whatever, they got great medicine for that. Nowadays, they actually give a little bit more for probably a little bit more for pain and a few other things like that. But it's mostly symptomatic. But I really want people to get this, because they assume, okay, the ER and the neurologist basically stopped at this level, which is symptomatic treatment. they didn't recommend anything else. And so people will feel like, well, that must be where the science ends. And the biggest problem is that actually isn't where the science ends. The science around hyperbaric and traumatic brain problems is growing and growing and growing, and has been for a long, long time. The science around some of these other things we're going to talk about, we did with you, is growing and improving. The problem is that medicine in the Western world where we live is very slow to like pick up on new stuff. So it's like 20 years from now, going and being referred for hyperbaric might be a normal thing after a head injury. Right now, you know, there, if you're not healing from a bad surgery and you're elderly, they'll refer you for it. If you have diabetic ulcers that aren't healing, they'll refer you. You know, there's a few things they'll use it for. So it's just, it's not in the standard of care, but people need to know that that doesn't mean that it's not something that's not helpful and that there's science behind it, which I think is really, really critical to point out.
I agree. And to add to layer on to that, one of the hospitals in Flathead County, Montana, Northwest Montana, where I go about every other month to see patients in Whitefish, Montana, they got rid of their hyperbaric chamber because they weren't even using it. So there's a lot of head injuries in Montana. Montana, I think, has the second highest per capita military veterans in the country or something like that. So a lot of them have head injuries from combat related stuff. And then other people, civilians, have head injuries from falls and car accidents, et cetera, as we're talking about. So that just kind of proves that the hospital there and most hospitals, unless you're in a city, aren't, you know, they're never going to use hyperbarics for this. And basically what I got from my MD neurologist was muscle relaxers to help me sleep, which I think I was sleeping like 12 to 13 hours, which it's, you know, you can't really do much if you're all hopped up on muscle relaxers, but I needed to sleep. So
yeah, they're a two-edged sword, because at least the times I've had them, my brain wasn't working from them, you know, so it's kind of hard to tell. But you are asleep. Yeah, that's the only benefit. And it is very common, like people after any level of head injury or concussion they'll either have hypersomnia where they sleep a lot, or they'll have really weird disrupted sleep because their brain and the parts of your brain that control like your neurohormones that your sleep wake cycle get shocked. And so you'll lose track of night and day and stuff. So sleep becomes a huge thing too. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we both see that a lot with the head injuries. So I've had some patients who don't sleep at all, and then they're up all night, and then they sleep from 5 or 6 a.m. for 2 to 3 hours after a concussion. So
Yeah. Well, so I'm looking at your, so we, as I said, I presented your case actually at the hyperbaric meeting in 2018 in August, I believe it was. And so I was going back through the slides that I used. And so obviously your name is not in here, your age is and all of that. So I went through the, you know, mechanism of injury and all that. And the quote that we had from the neurologist was, you had a concussion, there's nothing to do for them except symptom management. So it was, yeah, that was sort of, you know, you're not dying of anything else. That's all we're going to do. So there's that. Now, for people who don't know, an El Camino is not a small car. Okay. So this is like a late 70s, early 80s El Camino. They have giant V8 engines. They're the weight of a truck. They're styled to look like a car and a truck got together and had a baby or something like that. But these are big, like muscle car type cars. So even if it was going 20 miles an hour, that is a large amount of weight to ram into you. Reading your news and driving, not a good idea. This is also, I think, important, which is really good. I wrote all this down back then and made it into a case, so we have it all here. So your injury to the first time that we did hyperbaric and stuff was 14 days, which is pretty good. That's pretty fresh, actually. Like you were just talking about, you know, if hospitals all had these and that was standard of care when you banged your head, they could put you in, you know, that day. You actually get better results if you get dives like right away. But, you know, 14 days for the average person is way fast, because normally they go through the system and they're, no one's telling them anything to do other than giving them things for sleep or muscle relax or whatever, or pain. And then they kind of have to find out about it on their own, but sooner is better. So 14 days wasn't bad. And we started from the beginning with a combo of hyperbaric and IV therapy. And then you were doing supplements orally in between, which is important. So it's like the IV is, it's a really good addition because it increases your plasma levels of the nutrients, and then the hyperbaric increases plasma oxygen turnover. So it drives all those goodies in. But the stuff you take orally in between is just as critical, because you think about it, you take something every day, your blood levels also rise in those things. So that's basically what we did. And we started you out at 1.5 atmospheres and then went to 2 atmospheres. And moved on. The idea being we wanted to be on the higher end of treatment. And just so people know, for comparison, if you're like a deep sea diver or something like that, and you have a decompression sickness, they will put you way, way higher than 2 atmospheres to, you know, to get your body out of the decompression. So that's very, very safe, done appropriately. And then of course, that's what we're doing. So just without getting into too many specifics, the IV you got came most of the time, I think, in 3 pieces or 3 IVs sequentially. So there were nutrients that are there for healing, but also to help with the antioxidant systems working, because you burn those up when you're injured. Then there was glutathione, which is a really important natural antioxidant that's inside your cells and your plasma. And when you're injured, you kind of burn that up too. Like your body makes it, but the supply and demand goes up. And then there was a lipoic acid-based mitochondrial support that we gave you at the end. And so you would get that in a dive concurrently. And then, you know, at home, you were taking some phospholipids, which are really important in repairing the brain, CoQ10, lipoic acid, vitamins and minerals, you know, the kind of a good spread there. And I'm sure, you know, and there was other stuff you were doing too, but it was good because you at least had the basics going into you. And then we could kind of kick it up with the IV plus the hyperbaric going on. And when you, just because I have it in front of me and it's probably hard for you to remember everything in the beginning. So this is when we first started. This was kind of like your benchmark symptoms. Lots of brain fatigue, obviously, but physical fatigue too. And you have to remember that, like your brain controls your sensation of how your body feels. And when it's traumatized, it doesn't want you to do anything. So you feel fatigued everywhere. A lot of overstimulation, which people need to understand is really normal when you hurt your brain. So you can't handle sounds, you can't handle, any sensory input. And it, like, for some people, it will drive them, obviously, to avoid it. It would be, you know, a natural thing. The other, though, is it's really common, and you see this in people, and they talk about it a lot with veterans, which is true, or professional athletes who have TBIs, they'll get like angrier and angrier and lash out more because the nervous system is so overcharged that it's responding from this primal place of, you know, I need to protect myself from something. So that's like really common too. And then the other thing that you mentioned, which these are all just so common, it's like poster child for acute TBI, time perceptions, so just losing track of time, that sort of thing. cognitive things, like you know that there's a word but you can't connect the idea and the word, computational things, you know, all of these things. So those are really, really normal things. And to be told, well, you know, you didn't die from the accident, so we'll give you some muscle relaxers. Hopefully this all turns out good for you. The problem people also, I think, did, you know, humans are kind of creatures of what's in front of them at the moment for the most part. And if you wait long enough with symptomatic treatment, most of these things may get better over time on their own. But it's really not that the injury got better. It's that your brain is saying, your brain is telling you, you know, this isn't going to go away. So we're just not going to pay attention to these sounds, and we're not going to care about old bright lights. And we're, you know, we're going to calm down the anger response a little bit or whatever. So it's not like you're actually getting better. You're just adjusting, and you're adjusting with an injured brain. And that's what they find with, you know, the best studies really, right now, longest term studies are in football players, 'cause that's easy. But then we're getting more data from military folks with brain injuries, and it's the same pattern over and over. The problem also, and I think people need to know this, like if you're a frequent flyer with head injuries, and they see this in veterans and in the football players, definitely, because that's in research, later stage when your brain is suppressing all of these symptoms, suicidality increases. So this is not a low key kind of a problem. It's just going to, oh, it'll go away on its own. Like your chances of depression and suicidality and all of that rise over time, even though your injuries were 20 years ago. So it's really important to be proactive and take care of these things the best you can, you know, right away, if, or as soon as you can. And like we talked about, 5 years, 10 years later, you can still help it out. It's like, it's not a lost cause, but sooner is better for those who may have just been in an accident. I can't overstate that.
Yeah. I remember just the chronic pain alone with basically feeling like, I mean, I grew up with my dad doing construction. So, you know, when I was a kid, there was a wood shop in the garage. So it was like, if someone took like one of those wood clamps and put it on my head every day, that's how I felt. And that they were just clamping down harder and harder. And at one point, I mean, we're in Washington State, so topical cannabis, medical cannabis, recreational cannabis is legal. And I mean, I don't smoke marijuana or anything, but I had a jar of this cannabis oil, and I would just massage it into my neck and my head every night before bed, because even just putting my head on the pillow would start to flare everything up, and the neck pain and the headaches, mm-hmm. and nothing was really touching it until I got this muscle relaxer, and then that helped a little bit. But I found that that was the thing that did it for the pain. And I was getting, you know, acupuncture in my skull. I was getting chiropractic. I was doing PT. So I was doing the PhysMed stuff, as you mentioned, just so the listener knows the details of that. And I think people should do that stuff. But when you're at home and you're trying to get to bed and you feel like somebody's trying to squeeze your brain out of the top of your skull, having something topical that can help that isn't going to have side effects was helpful for me. And it wasn't internal. So I would wake up the next morning, and as soon as I finished or started brushing my teeth, the headache would start again. Mm-hmm. So it was every day for 4 months. Yeah. And the anger was bad. I remember having fights with some close people in my life that I normally wouldn't really have those kinds of fights with. So, luckily I didn't have those fights with anyone at work, so that was good. But,
it's always the people we love, right?
Right. Poor innocent bystanders.
Yeah. Yeah. We feel safe with them.
Yeah. Just let it all out. But yeah. So if you're listening to this and this is you and you're thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe it's the head injuries, or maybe it's the head injuries causing other things, low hormones, et cetera. So,
You know, the other thing too is beyond and this is from your case and the data that you gave us, beyond the cognitive things and the sensory overload and, you know, anger, stuff like that, fully half of your initial symptom list were pain related. And it basically was from the top of your head down to the middle of your back, which of course would have been the part that has this, you know, the strain injury anyway, when you get hit like that. And that, like, that's just pouring salt in the wound, because not only has your brain gone sloshing back and forth in your skull and it's injured, but everything holding your head and your body up is injured as well. So it's all trying to heal, which is part of the overload feeling. And something that's cool and nice about the kind of therapies we do, especially when you combine them with hyperbaric, is they don't just go to your brain and work there. Like, the physical injuries in your musculoskeletal system are also very well addressed by hyperbaric and most of the nutrients that you were doing anyway. So it's all, you know, it's all synergized together. It's really nice, because in Western medicine, the goal with drug therapy is always to make it as specific as possible. And if we can only send it to your brain or your heart or whatever, that's great. The goal with promoting healing kind of has to be the opposite of that, because you rarely just hurt your brain. Like, the brain is hurt because the rest of you went through something that was unpleasant, and your body only has so much reserve to heal. So if we can give you impetus to heal through biochemical, natural means and oxygen and pressure, it really helps the whole picture, and you do heal faster. So one of the things that we did, which, you know, I knew I was going to use your case to present to all of these doctors from around the world who so I've been going to the hyperbaric meetings a long time. I've presented at them a number of times. And usually because they're very hyperbaric oxygen oriented people, most of the doctors in attendance they look at what I do as like, wow, well, okay. You know, like, there's no way I'd ever do that. And they're mostly from the allopathic world, because this is like, you know, just another allopathic treatment to them. And I literally had a guy come up to me after, when I was talking about cancer and hyperbaric, and I was saying about these IVs that we do. And he says, it makes total sense to me. That's really logical. Do you have any like references I can read about this? Because he says, essentially in my world, this is just witchcraft. And, you know, and I thought, well, at least you said it out loud. So I gave him some information, and then as time has gone on, I've noticed, as I've opened the door to that, now they have more people talking about it. But because your case was going to be presented, and this isn't like, they're not an unfriendly crowd, they're just unaware of like all these other things you can do, I wanted to have as much tracking data as we could have. And so I used a from Ohio State University, Wexner Medical Center. They came up with a TBI screening assessment, and that's what we had you do pretty much every time, or at certain checkpoints. And the best thing about it is, especially with TBIs, is you can't really cheat on them unless you have copies of the old ones, because people don't remember that well, especially in the beginning. So like, what you put down 3 days ago and what you put down now, if you're trying to game it and say, I'm doing worse or better, you're not going to remember what you scored yourself the other time anyway. And what was also interesting on the early ones was sometimes there was places to write stuff in, and sometimes you just wrote stuff in. And in the early ones, you could really see like the state of your brain, because the responses were just like, wow, he's not doing well, you know. So like, you'd respond and you'd be writing sideways across the thing and all kinds of stuff. So but all that got better over time too. But the nice thing is, so when we get around to talking about your trajectory of healing, it wasn't just based on, you know, whoever did your hyperbaric, your IV, saying, well, do you feel better or worse today? It was actually based on the same criteria each time we checked it. And I think that's important because if you look at the football studies, the football players with TBIs, just so patients or people know listening, they do hyperbaric, and it would normally take them 40 hyperbaric treatments to get to the place where they could decide whether they needed more or not, were they more stable or not. And a large number at 40 had good improvements. They had less suicidality, they had less pain, memory was better, et cetera. And about, I forget the percentages, but a smaller percent, but significant, needed 80. And some needed 120 before they would get there. So no one's ever really looked at something using more than just hyperbaric, although people like me do it. So yours was sort of like, I knew we could only probably get 20 or less in before I had to go to the conference. And I really wanted to see what kind of traction can we get doing that. So I think that's important. And I don't know, you want to talk about like your improvement trajectory now, or do you want to talk about something else and then talk?
Yeah,
about
sure. That? I can just input maybe like what was happening towards the beginning middle of the hyperbaric treatments. So this started mid June. The treatment plan that I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, was IV therapy, hyperbaric therapy in one visit. So three different IV bags, then get in the HBOT or HBOT then IV. And then that's twice a week. And that was the bare ass minimum, so to speak, allotted per week. And then I did that for a couple of weeks. And then 4th of July rolled around and I drove to Montana, which was, looking back, a mistake because driving is not good for your brain.
Yeah.
And after you've had, as we, you know, people call it now, brain lash, whiplash with a concussion, driving long distance, sitting in a car is not good for your spine and your brain. So I came back worse. I slid backwards from that 4-day visit to Montana for that long weekend. And that was not good. And then I missed, I think because of that 3-day or 4-day weekend, I missed the Monday treatment. And then we started getting 3 to 4 in a week in July, the rest of July. And I started getting better rapidly when we did 3 to 4, and that just sped it up even more. And since I wasn't able to work, I was able to, I just said, well, I need to recover, and I made that priority. So I think if someone's in an acute situation, if you can make it priority. The other thing that came to mind is, I think you alluded to this in the beginning of today's podcast, but hard shell, why hard shell? And then if people only have access to soft shell, and we did another podcast that got into this, but just real quick, would they need more therapy with the soft shell chamber of hyperbaric, or could they still do 40 and then reevaluate? And is it safe to do that? I mean, for us, we just did it straight through every week, but do they need to take a day, not a day, but a week or month off?
Yeah, so just with respect to the low versus high pressure, soft versus hard side. So if it's a soft-sided chamber, it's a low pressure system. If it's a hard, either plexiglass or metal chamber, it's a high pressure chamber. And like we said at the beginning, for most things you do hyperbaric for, especially chronic problems, low versus high, there's not that much difference really. Acute brain injuries, if you can get to a hard pressure high pressure chamber, you'll get better faster. Okay, so there is a difference with acute injury, and that was your case. But there's a lot of people who live in places in the, if there's any chamber at all, it's a soft side. Here's the way that I look at it. If you've got the choice of no hyperbaric or soft side, lower pressure hyperbaric, and then doing all the other stuff to help you, soft side, lower pressure is definitely better than not doing anything. And so the sooner you can do it, the better. Now, if, like I say, if it's 5 or 10 year old stuff, there's almost no difference because you're going to do a lot of treatment anyway. So soft side is just fine for that. But between zero treatment and soft side, definitely do the soft side. And here's the thing, and this, so I'm actually looking at your treatment schedule. So you're almost completely accurate, which is good, to your schedule. And I think this brings up a super important point, which I wish, in retrospect, I wish we could have flip-flopped this. So like you said, you did 3 weeks at twice a week, and that was our original thought, was at least come in twice a week, because you were trying to work, and, you know, people have lives and all that stuff. And then there was the holiday week, and that was when you drove and all that. And then you were basically so not great after that trip. That was our decision, was, well, let's get you in 4 times a week. And you actually did 2 weeks at 4 times a week. And then you did some more after that, but that's where I had to cut it off for your case to present it. If I had this to do over again and give people advice who've just gotten a brain injury or who are going to start hyperbaric, I would have flipped it and said, can you do 4 or 5 times a week the first 3 weeks? We would be way further ahead. And, you know, sometimes people can't just because of their schedule, but it's like, you know, it is your brain. It's the only one we get. We should do as much as we can for it. And I believe, based on your response to the later treatments where we did a lot more treatments during a week, which is kind of the standard of monotherapy hyperbaric, is 4 or 5 a week. I think we'd have been better off doing that up front. But that, all that being said, there is a thing called oxygen toxicity. If you do too much high pressure treatment with supplemental oxygen, it's real hard to achieve in the scheduling like we're doing it here. But even at bad brain injuries, at high intensity, high pressure hyperbaric, they will still do 4 or 5 treatments a week for at least the first, say 6 weeks, get up to around 20, 24 treatments or whatever, and then make some decisions. Partly the idea is you can get to 40 treatments faster, et cetera. If you're doing synergistic treatment, it looks to me like, especially with a fresh injury, you're doing your oral supplements, you get the IV and the hyperbaric together, probably the first check-in should be at 20 treatments. So about half of the normal. And that's just because you're doing more stuff, really. But let's say you're in the middle of, I don't want to say nowhere because you're somewhere, but all you have is a hyperbaric chamber and the soft side that you can get to, and you can take some oral supplements. You're still going to be ahead of other people, but you should probably assume to do 4 a week, if you can, 4 to 5 a week for like 30 to 40 treatments before you judge it too, harshly or whatever. So I think schedule wise, yeah. And just looking, on black and white on paper, looking at your treatment schedule, and now in retrospect, knowing that, when I presented your case, I have week 4, it says holiday week, one treatment, So I was like, well, why did the guy only get one treatment? At the time when I did this, I didn't know the full depth of how that drive over there and that trip affected you until you got back, and then we kicked up the volume of your treatments. But I really do think if we would have done, 4 or 5 weeks in the first 2 weeks, you might have been way better off.
Yeah. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. I did get great results. And I did forget to mention in the beginning of today's podcast, right before the accident, I had done a IV ozone treatment. So, and this podcast isn't about IV ozone, but from what my doctors have told me and from everything that I know about IV ozone, I think that probably protected me a little bit from things being worse potentially. But who knows, but so it could have been a worse injury. And I Googled, I think, like 2 months after the injury when I was sitting with my personal injury lawyer. And I think the El Camino weighs 2,000 to 3,000 pounds, depending on the model.
So, at least. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so for their listeners, it wasn't like a little, Honda Civic.
It's three or four Honda Civics.
Yeah. It's a big car. It's a big car. And I remember, what I do remember is the license plate said it was like a collector's edition, or there was like some license plate frame on his license plate.
Yeah.
That said that. And I was kind of like, well, that's cool. But, you know, I can't even think straight right now.
Yeah.
So, cool car. Don't hit me again.
Oh,
don't read the news on your cell phone. And I mean, the other things that are not related to like IVs and HBOT, but for people who've had concussions or they're still struggling from recovering from a concussion, is like getting away from your smartphone, getting away from your computer, which as an entrepreneur is almost impossible.
Right.
So for me, that was like, okay, I got to work a little bit. But like decreasing blue light, decreasing bright lights, all those things help a lot. Not driving, you know, 1,000 miles or 800 miles,
yeah,
to another state, which
Montana, so we've established that was, yeah, probably not a great idea. Yeah,
that's really not a good idea. So don't try to do a road trip when you should be in the HBOT, should be in the hyperbaric chamber. Stay home. Yeah, I mean, you're just not thinking straight. I think that's clear, right? It's like, yeah, let's just go on vacation.
Yeah, I think, and this happens a lot with, with any trauma, but especially brain injuries. If it's you and you're listening now, or you're like the loved one of someone listening, that effect of, you're punch drunk essentially, and so you'll think something is a great idea, everyone around you will think it's not a great idea, and you really need to like listen through the punch drunkenness to your providers and to other people. If they say this might not be a great time to X, you know, do your taxes, or you know, or finish writing a book, or you know, anything that requires a whole lot of things, or drive across the country. Listen to other people. It's going to sound weird, but there's actually an analogy that now that they promote it is the exact same thing. When people, if you watch the public service announcements for how do you know if someone's having a stroke, right? The one universal thing almost when people are having strokes, which of course is lack of oxygen getting to a part of your brain for one reason or the other, is that they will become just like a TBI patient. So they'll be angry, agitated, and they will refuse to go to the doctor and or go to the hospital because their brain is thinking the opposite is the best plan. Well, people with a TBI, it's the exact same way. It's like, well, how bad could that be? And the idea is, well, it really could sideline your healing, you know, if you do some things. So I think that's important. And I'll get to the actual numbers, but there was this wonderful quote in, I had you do a summary for me right before, so it was at your 15th or 16th treatment, right before I left for this conference, because I had to present your case. And I'm not sure how you calculated this number, but I'll just read a quote here. Subjective improvement. Globally, I think I'm 82% recovered from the accident. And on a subjective measurement, that's pretty good, but 82%. So it was like you were at 80, but you want to give yourself a couple of points. And I've... This is the kind of thing a brain injury does, but it was like, I just took it. I wrote it down, and you got to chuckle out of the crowd over that. I said, subjectively, he's not 80, he's 82. So we know he's.
That's good.
Every other number you reported was an even number, you know, or of like a 40, 50, 60 or something.
Yeah.
But I was glad it was 82%. I mean, at least it wasn't like 22%. But the other thing I think it's important for people, so let's say you had like 15 treatments at this point or something because of the break week and your drive and all that. Your global improvement was really pretty good. Okay, and we'll look at the numbers in a second. But your memory and ability to work, like how much time during the day, I mean, started with none, and improved, that was a slower recovery because it's a lot of brain power using to work, concentrate, et cetera. But at that time, at 15 or 16 treatments, you were up to about 4.5 hours before your brain would kind of just tell you, I'm done. And I think in the beginning, you know, it was like 0 to 2 or something like that. I mean, it wasn't very much time at all. So your cognitive ability was improving, but people need to know that's not a speedy thing. Like you don't really get back to your, you know, your normal brain power for a little while. And this is with pretty aggressive treatment, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's important to keep in mind. There's nothing magic about it. You can't like go do one hyperbaric treatment and be like, woo, all better.
That would be nice. Yeah. That would be really nice. Yeah. It doesn't quite work that way.
There's almost no one treatment that's going to do anything like that, but I think it's important for people also just to be realistic about, because like when you know, being someone who's had more than my share of all sorts of injuries, but especially head injuries, you're like, it takes time out of your day, it costs money, it's you know, it's like there's not like it's not like free time you have just to do this, you know. And of course, like you said, when you got to the point you couldn't work, you did have time and all of that. But still, it's like, it's hard to prioritize the time and the expense to do something to help you that you may not see some benefit for like 20 treatments or something like that. But on the other side of it, once you've done it, you're usually pretty glad that you did and you didn't like just put it off and not, you know, not do it, et cetera. So I think that's pretty critical. Just because it's the next slide I have here and I get to see it and you don't, I was just going to go through. So for the purposes of this presentation I did to these doctors, who were very interested by your case, this is going to sound up, but not so much because of the hyperbaric part, because that's what they all do, like that's their thing. But it was more the synergy with the other therapies and the fact that we tracked it and the fact that pretty much in half of the normal checkpoint time. So you were probably, by the time we did, I did the presentation, you were up to about 20 treatments. We cut off, I think, at 15 or 16. You had improved about the same amount that we would expect at 40 or 50 just hyperbarics. And so what we tracked with you was headache, dizziness, fatigue, loss of concentration, sensory overload, which we talked a lot about, inability to work, and then an overall baseline, just sort of a global score, which you remember was 82% at the end there. And so because this is the tracking is called active comparator. So you're comparing to your own baseline because you're the person who was injured. So we started you, and we gave you a scale to use. So most of the things were kind of 10 out of 10, with the exception of dizziness was 8 out of 10 and concentration was 8 out of 10, but every other marker was pegged at 10 out of 10. And basically, if you look at the trend line, nothing got worse from, so we checked in, I think, about every fourth treatment or something like that. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4. We got five check-ins over, let's say, 15. So that's about every 3 treatments. And the cool thing is there are some things like from first to second was a pretty good drop, but they were pretty significant scores. From the second to the third check-in it kind of was stable. It didn't get a whole lot better with the exception of the sensory overload thing. But I think that was also right about the time of that trip, the long drive, which we decided wasn't a great thing. But then when we went from there to the closer together batch of things, like you dropped really precipitously as far as the intensity of the scores. And so so people kind of know how to or what to expect or whatever, the sensory overload and the amount of time you could work per day were the slowest to kind of recover, which made, and they go together kind of, it's mm-hmm. like you can only take so much sensory overload and still work, do the work we do anyway. And so I think that that's important. Whereas a lot of the other things, it's kind of the global symptoms of dizziness and general concentration, headaches and stuff, they just, when you went to 4 a week, they drop really quick. And that was awesome. It was really great to see. If you remind me, I'll actually send you your slides so you can frame them and put them somewhere.
I would love to. Yeah.
But I think it's important because, yes, we tracked it so I could present it as a case and all of that. But it also, what I had seen in the prior 2 years was with people with reasonably fresh head injuries of any kind, or the other analog is actually we do a lot with people right after surgery, which is, you know, you're opting into a trauma, but it's still a trauma to get surgery. We see the same trajectory, like people heal faster and they're back to work and they're doing more faster and stuff. So we knew there was synergy and we knew the synergy was helpful. It's just we never really tracked it before. So this was, I'm sad that you hurt your brain, but it was really nice to be able to see this and see that it really did help you all the way around.
Yeah, I think there's been, I mean, for me personally and professionally, I think there's been a lot of silver linings to this, so to speak. I mean, I'm focusing more on neuroendocrine approach at my clinic now. So the brain does send all the hormone signals to the endocrine glands, in case the listeners don't know. And I'm sure all the doctors do know that if you remember endocrinology. But it's important. I mean, I've had patients over the years that have benefited from these treatments and, you know, and I know when to send patients to your clinic in North Seattle. So it definitely highlights this more, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to get this recording out as a podcast to people so that they can say, hey, you know, I have this patient, they're not recovering. We're doing all the things, all the naturopathic things and natural medicine things, and let's get them some hyperbaric and IV therapy. And then, you know, look at their hormone levels too. The other things that I have used more since last summer, so this is February 2020 for today's recording. Last summer, I noticed that the RG3 methylcobalamin NAD nasal spray mix really helped. And I remember we recorded a podcast last summer together and I was getting it from a different compounding pharmacy. And that mixture did not work that well and it didn't have NAD in it. So, and then I switched to a different compounding pharmacy, Key Compounding Pharmacy, just with the RG3 and methylcobalamin, and Key Compounding is in the greater Seattle area for people who don't know. And that worked well too without the NAD. So it does matter where you get your compounded medicines from.
Super important. You know, I think that is a change since this is 2 years ago now, almost year and a half. Something I've started using just regularly with people with a lot of injuries, but especially neuro, is oral nicotinamide riboside, which increases your NAD levels naturally. Now, mm-hmm. yeah, if you can get it as a nasal spray, you can use NAD up your nose. But orally, there's a ton of research on nicotinamide riboside, and between all the nicotinamide you use in your brain, just there, but also for all of the other, it does a lot of healing. It runs a whole bunch of very important enzymes. That's been something I've added on since. And I, you know, in retrospect, I probably would have had you doing that had I been a little more, you know, hip to that. It's interesting. You were mentioning the nasal spray. There were one or two presenters at this conference where it's talking about you, and they were, you know, sort of more of these like cutting edge things where they're doing these nasal installations of all kinds of things. And there was a guy from a medical doctor from Colorado kind of going through how he did these different things. And it really started me thinking about, because he was doing hyperbaric and then these kind of nasal applications of peptides and other stuff. So I think that's a really important thing. And your comment about the pharmacy that makes it is, you know, if you got a good one, stick with them because they probably really know how to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Key Compounding Pharmacy. I like TaylorMade Compounding. So that TaylorMade does a lot of peptides. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's helped me since last summer that I kind of cycle on and off, you know, we've run out of things and then we forget to get them. And then they're like, oh yeah, that was helping. Go to Cola Complex. So it's a tablet by MediHerb, which is a great herbal medicine company that I've been using for 21 years for myself and for my patients for years. It's go to Cola leaf 10 to 1 extract, grapeseed, 120 to 1 extract of grapeseed. And ginkgo leaf 51 extract. So that's good. And then just some nervine herbs and things. I would say the things left over for me are mostly light sensitivity. And I think it's just a matter of time. And, you know, it's maybe a good thing that I live in Seattle most of the time because it's not that sunny. So, but be a vampire up here.
No, that's really putting a silver lining on it there.
Yeah, right. I'm being really positive today. I must have taken the right herbal mixtures.
I've never heard something. Oh, it's good I live in Seattle because the light doesn't bother me.
Yeah, right. I mean, wow. I love sunshine. On the flip side, neurologically, I've noticed that I don't do well as far as like seasonal affective disorder is far worse after the head injury. So just got to leave a lot, go somewhere sunny. So yeah, thank God Montana gets sun. But yeah, I mean, I guess my question to you would be for someone like me at this point, we're about a year and a half out. I'm thinking about getting a soft shell chamber for myself and family members. Would it be sufficient to do that once a month or every other week, or just kind of depends on how you're feeling that month? What would like a maintenance schedule look like for somebody, for me, if I were coming to your clinic in Northgate, North Seattle, Washington, to get follow-up care?
Yeah, it goes back a little bit to what we were just talking about with respect to, you know, in hindsight, I would have done like 4 days a week in the beginning and then flipped it. If you're pretty stable, you could do one or two a week and kind of stay stable. If you've sort of backslid a bit or for whatever reason, stress or life, or you hit your head again or whatever, what I'd recommend is doing, you know, 3 or 4 a week for a few weeks and then going. And what we do is a simple, it's just a withdrawal trial basically to your symptoms. So let's say you had a reversal and you're still like, and it really flared up something that wasn't a problem, your headaches or whatever, and you had a chamber available to you, I would do like 3 to 4 a week for 2 weeks. If it feels like you're gaining, then go to 2 a week, then go to 1 a week. And then, you know, maintenance wise, twice a month is probably the lowest amount maintenance wise, but it really, really is quite helpful. And like I said, at the non-acute stage, the soft side chambers have the same chemical benefits that the hard side do. And long term, you know, slow and steady, they're going to do the same stuff. If you have the opportunity right after you get your head injured and you get some high pressure, great. If not, at least get low pressure. So, yeah, so maintenance is more, you know, what's your outcome you're looking to deal with? And if you can do more on the front end than spread it out, that's probably the way I would do it. Yeah. A lot of people will do once a week for a while too, if it was real bad. Or, you know, what's interesting, which is different than a TBI, but it's got the same things. When whether it's cancer or not, when people get brain surgery, which is obviously a lot of disruption, if they can do hyperbaric soon after, it's amazing how much quicker they heal and their neurological symptoms go away from the disruption of cutting their head open and moving their brain around and stuff. So if you think of that, like with that level of internal damage, and you think in the TBI setting, your brain literally was sloshing back and forth and pulling on everything, it's just as bad as a brain surgery. So sooner is better, but if it's been 5 years, you can still be helped by these things. And you know, it's interesting you brought up gotocol. There was some reason I had to, well, it was a class I was teaching and someone asked about gotocol specifically, and I looked it up again. And the cool thing with gotocol, especially in a complex, is it naturally upregulates a lot of the antioxidant system. So it helps with glutathione function. It helps with superoxide dismutase. It does a lot of stuff to kind of calm the waters. And that's probably why it's so good for, you know, for healing and brain stuff and all that stuff. I love gotocol.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a favorite herb. As a liquid, it's very bitter. So if you're listening, I would try to get a practitioner prescribe MediHerb.
Yeah.
And I don't have like stock in MediHerb or anything yet. So not like I'm making money if you buy MediHerb from somebody else. Wouldn't that be nice? But
yeah, but you aren't, so
I'm not. So, but yeah, so, you know, continued care. So someone like me who doesn't really have that many brain symptoms, but just some light sensitivity, would do like twice a week or once a week, and that could stabilize, but also help improve things with some other oral and nasal therapies on board.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, just because it's super important, soft side chambers, if they're a well-made, you know, like we use OxyHealth, which actually is different than any other spelled. There's other companies that have almost the same name, but it's just OXY Health. And the reason we use them is they're engineered very, very well. Like they could handle way more pressure than they do. But safety wise, it's pretty much impossible to like get toxic or anything like that with a lower pressure system. And so we do have people, adults and children, who, you know, they'll rent them and use them at home because then they can get in 5 days a week or whatever. So if that's something that's, you know, something you're going to work on, it's quite safe, and a good company will get you set up and tell you how to do it right and all that stuff. But, you know, as opposed to hard side chamber, where higher pressures, you're going to monitor more stuff, soft sides, your safety index is like huge in a good way.
That's good to know. Yeah. And kind of similar to any medical equipment, it matters the brand. So the OxyHealth brand is what you recommend.
Yeah. And I have no stock in their company either. I don't get anything for saying. The joke I make is I own two of their chambers and I had to pay full price for both of them. So I must like them if I'm saying good things about them.
Yeah, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Yep. Yeah. Are there any parting things that you think people need to know that we haven't hit on, or maybe something you're seeing in a recent patient who's had a head injury or a chronic head injury that is kind of like big deal that someone should hear?
You know, I think really going back to the basics of the sooner you can get in, the better. Synergy, if you can do something where you're getting like IV and then hyperbaric and then you're taking the oral stuff between. I do think, like we mentioned in your case, if I would have been a little more aware of getting NAD levels up, like with nicotinamide riboside or the nasal sprays, I would have implemented that with you right away. That's the one, that and more treatment on the front end are the two things I would do different with you. I think that, you know, the other thing is looking at it like kind of going down a slide, where after the injury, you're putting more time, effort, resources into treatment and all that stuff. And the more you do on the front end at the high end of the slide, then the less you have to do over time. The more chronic it becomes, you're going to spend the same amount of resources and time and everything. It's just going to be drug out over a longer part of your life. So, you know, earlier is better. But let's say you're a 5 or a 10 year chronic case, you still want to do more on the front end because it'll kickstart you better. So, you know, look for people who do this. Look for people who, and here's what happens in a lot of parts of the country now. There may be a clinic that doesn't have their own chamber, but in their town, there's a hyperbaric clinic, and they collaborate. So like, you can get your hyperbaric, drive over to the other clinic, get your IV. That's fine. You're in the same time period. That's happening more and more now, which is great. That's, you know, it's kind of what we hope for.
Excellent. And then one last quick question, as far as the two atmosphere depth, was that the highest depth that I got to, or did we go like 2.5 or something? And what is kind of your standard for TBIs for the depth with hyperbarics?
When you were at the clinic and our hard side was newer, we were valved up to 2.2 and you went up to 2.2. We've revalved, which is just what regulates the pressure, and we would comment, we would take you probably 2.5 now. So that would be the other change, would be a little bit more pressure, but it still worked out pretty good. Most clinics that do a lot of brain stuff, almost all their protocols, if they're monotherapy, are at 2.2 to 2.5, and that works fine. Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know you got to get going in a little bit here. Everybody should be following you on Facebook at Dr. A Online and Instagram at Dr. A Online. And if you're interested in the cancer aspect, Dr. Anderson does a lot of cancer therapies. His book, Outside the Box Cancer Therapies, is a must have. And you have a new book coming out. Do you have a title or a release date?
I'm very excited because we've turned in the manuscript to the publisher, which is awesome. And of course there's stuff we got to fix, but now we're in the exciting part of titles and artwork and all that business. And I met with I was assigned the artist today to do the cover, and like her list of covers she's done, like everyone would know all of these are some big time books. I was pretty happy. But the title specialist, we finally got a title picked out. And the book is Outside the Box is about treatments and kind of everything, you know, sort of like one of everything. This one is really about the internal effect that a cancer diagnosis has on you or your loved one and how to navigate that so you don't get sidelined from just, you know, literally wanting to like die or curl up and, you know, whatever. So the book is really about dealing with that, the biggest part, which is your mind body thing. And so we came up with the title. So the main title is Cancer. Subtitle is Living Your Life While You Have It. And the book is it comes from my, you know, 3 decades of working with cancer patients and what I've seen people do better or worse, places where I felt like now that I know where people go off the rails and they get so depressed that they actually die faster or whatever, or their family members fall apart, you know, and this is humans, natural. It's literally my experiences with that and then trying to give people steps to do so that they don't go there and they can, you know, move towards a healthier brain space, which is just so critical. So that's the book, Cancer, Living Your Life While You Have It. And it's coming out, same publisher that did, David Goggins' book, You Can't Kill Me.
Oh, great.
And a bunch of other, pretty cool books. I don't think I'll look as great on the cover as David, so we'll probably use some other art, but but I'm excited for it. It's like it's getting more real now. We're hoping to launch it in June or July.
June 2020 or July 2020. Great. Excellent.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So everybody keep a lookout for that book. I'm going to definitely get that book. I don't work with cancer patients at this time, but I have had a lot of family members who have had cancer, so I think that's a must-have for somebody like me. Well, this was spectacular. I'm hopeful that this is going to help a lot of people, today's podcast. And, you know, it's always a pleasure having you on my podcast, and thanks for all you've done for me and everybody in the naturopathic and natural medicine community.
I know you got to get going. So everybody, just to reiterate, you can follow Dr. A online at Facebook and Instagram, and you can go to his website, consultdra.com, and you can find all of the information about his seminars and whatnot there, correct?
Yes, everything is there.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we're going to close it up. Everybody share the podcast with friends or family. And this was Dr. Paul Anderson today with TBI case study, hyperbaric chambers, and IV therapy. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, man. Okay, bye. Yeah,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.